Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. According to what I've just been told, here's the podcast for the Early Morning Late Show. Enjoy our conversations. Good morning. It's 4 minutes after the hour. It is Tuesday, May 8th, and I'm awfully glad that you joined me this morning. I'll do my very best to help you get your day started. Today is National Teacher Day. It's a great day to let your teachers know just how much you appreciate them, even if you have the opportunity to find the address of a teacher you once had. If that person is still living, send them a note. Oh, my goodness. That will just blow them away. And my niece, Mary, is a teacher. She teaches high school in Hudson, Wisconsin, and I just think she's about the coolest person out there. So happy Teacher's Day to you, Mary. And as I was looking at Scripture this morning, 1 Timothy 6:6 jumped off the page right onto my forehead. It said, "But godliness with contentment is great gain." Godliness with contentment is great gain. I don't think we have a lot of contentment from day to day, because there's so many things that get our attention and distract us and stress us. And I think you have to pursue godliness and pray that with that will come peace and contentment. Paul talked about that, contentment, and that doesn't seem to be a word we hear very often or talk about very much, but what a great word. All right, here's a woman in Boston. She ran into the convenience store with her car running, her SUV, probably not a great idea. And a thief just said, I'm going to take it. So he did. And then when she came out, she realized that not only was her SUV gone, but her yellow lab named Chief was inside it. So she was mostly panicked about Chief. And I understand that completely. She did get the car. They did find it, and Chief was in it. So, and the suspect was taken into custody. I would not serve him dinner that night or dessert. We're taking a van that had a SUV that had a Chief in it. All right, we got Rob Bluey. He's already on our studio line, so let's just not waste any more time. Let's get to Rob. Let's take a little break. Rob Bluey is up next, the editor-in-chief of the Daily Signal. All right, the big hand is on the 8, so it's just a little after 8 minutes after the hour. So we've got a lot of hour ahead of you if you've got to be at work at the top of the hour. So enjoy your morning, get a cup of coffee, and listen to what Rob Bluey has to say, because he's always very informed, and he's editor of the Daily Signal and is on our studio line right now. Hello, Rob.
Good morning. It's great to be with you.
Thanks. Say, sure enjoyed Jarrett Stepman last week, but love having you back.
Well, it's good. Yeah, we were tied up last week, but, you know, the news never stops in Washington, so we always have somebody there for you.
Yeah. Now, plastered across the headlines is this Eric Schneiderman bit, the New York Attorney General. And I did find this interesting. Donald Trump, in his tweet, said, Wiener is gone, Spitzer is gone, next will be lightweight AG Eric Schneiderman. Is he a crook? Wait and see. Worse than Spitzer or Wiener? He wrote that tweet in 2013.
Yeah, it truly is. I mean, obviously, he was somebody who was a thorn in President Trump's side, repeatedly trying to stymie his policies through the legal system. And so, you know, another person loses his job in the Me Too movement, and the accusations that he's denying, but are still very serious. Are shocking for somebody in the type of position that he's in as the chief law enforcement officer of the state of New York.
Mm-hmm. Rob, I was talking to a friend of mine yesterday, and he was discussing the idea that, you know, President Trump doesn't drink or smoke. I mean, he doesn't take drugs. So yet he's very social. He's been at these parties throughout all of his career because he's a guy that likes to be out in public and connecting with people because he's a business guy. And you wonder what he heard over all these years of being at these parties where maybe other people were drinking and saying things with a loose tongue.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up because I think it's an aspect of President Trump that probably isn't talked about enough. The fact that he's taken so personally this opioids epidemic because he himself has seen the firsthand consequences of abuse. I believe it was his brother who suffered through alcohol or drug abuse.
Yeah, Fred.
And eventually, he lost his brother to that. So it's had a very personal toll on his own life. And you're absolutely right. When you're under the influence of drugs and alcohol, there are bad things that can happen. And we don't know if that's the case with some of these abuse allegations we're now hearing about with the New York State Attorney General. But in so many cases, you just have to wonder what's going through somebody's mind, particularly in this time that we live in. If you're a man in a position of power like he is, to carry out these types of abusive situations, which again he's denying, it raises some questions. And the fact that he resigned so quickly, I think, showed that the pressure was on.
Yeah. All right. Is there another Obamacare repeal effort underway?
Well, we certainly hope so, Bill. I mean, this is one of those situations where Republicans for 7 years campaigned on the promise to repeal and replace Obamacare. They came so close. It was John McCain who at the very last minute, when everyone thought he was going to give a thumbs up, he gave the thumbs down. But Republicans are certainly, they certainly have time on their hands here. It's only May. I know that the political prospects probably don't look good for House Republicans to retain control next year, although it's still a long time before November. But in these intervening months, I think you have a lot of conservatives who say, rather than just going back home and campaigning or doing other small things, let's do something big and bold and let's prove to the voters that that we actually are going to keep that promise that we said. So there is a plan afoot. There are several conservative leaders, including some of my colleagues at the Heritage Foundation, who have been putting together this plan. They not only have a plan to repeal the law, but to replace it with something that they think will be, if not the big and best improvement, at least a significant change over what we have now. Because let's face it, people are still seeing limited choices. They're still not pleased with their health care, and they'd like better options.
Mm-hmm. Rob, do you think Senator McCain is sort of consumed with a personal vendetta against Donald Trump?
Well, I mean, it was disappointing to hear some of his comments in recent days about how he doesn't want the president to come to his funeral, and certainly he's entitled to his views on whom he would want there. But obviously, Senator McCain is facing a terrible situation with the brain cancer he has, mm-hmm. and some of the debilitating treatments that he's going through right now. But look, there's clearly animosity between the two. Just as President Trump decided not to go to Barbara Bush's funeral, I think he's going to respect the wishes of whoever that might be in that situation. But let's face it, John McCain and Donald Trump are two people that have gone at each other for a number of years now, and certainly, McCain's vote on Obamacare was a moment that I think Donald Trump has repeatedly come back to. He referenced it in his speech at CPAC earlier this year amid boos from the crowd. So certainly no love lost between the two.
Mm-hmm. So bring me up to date with what's going on at the border. I know I'm reading that illegal immigration has gone way up, and I thought that was always going down, down, down. Now it's way, way up.
Yeah, so you're absolutely right on that. And we had a high-profile situation not too long ago with this caravan of migrants who was coming from Central America, making their way through Mexico. And, well, that story kind of disappeared from the headlines because I think many of them were turned back or Mexico dispersed them. There was a contingent that still came forward, came to California, and were met there, and the Attorney General promised that they would be swiftly apprehended. But it's just one example of, I think, the ongoing challenges that you see with illegal immigration. So, yes, you're absolutely right. The numbers are still increasing. I mean, this is typical for this time of year. Obviously, in the summer, it gets too hot. And, so, for them to be making the long trek through the cooler months of spring, is a time when that sometimes happens. And it shows the need for really a solution. There's been limited action in Congress. They've done a few small things, but not nearly on the grand scale that President Trump would like to see. And while there will be some efforts to build a wall or a portion of a wall, I think that there's a number of other steps that Congress could probably take to help stem this increasing tide.
Mm-hmm. Rob, let me take a very short break. When I come back, I've got a bunch more questions. Boy, unemployment's never been lower. I want to talk about that when I return. Speaking to Rod Bluey, Rob is the editor of the Daily Signal. You can go to dailysignal.com to see lots of good articles and blogs from various authors, including Rob. Be back in a minute. It's 17 minutes after the hour. I'm speaking to Rob Bluey, the editor-in-chief of the Daily Signal. DailySignal.com is the place to go looking for Rob. So, let's see. Unemployment's dropped to 3.9% in April. That's the lowest unemployment rate since 2000. That's pretty encouraging.
It certainly is. And when you look at it across the board, Bill, lots of good news for a variety of Americans. People are getting jobs. They are keeping those jobs, and basically, you know, what some economists call full employment. Basically, that means that it's harder now for the businesses to recruit and attract talent because they just can't find the people in the communities. So there are some areas of the country which are so desperate to find people now that they're actually giving them bonus spot bonuses, you know, new employee bonuses, and these are not just like big manufacturers. These are some of the people in the service industry as well. So this is really encouraging news, and I think that if you're the president, it's something that you probably want to emphasize, perhaps a little bit more than is getting the attention that it is. I mean, Russia and the Mueller investigation continue to dominate the headlines. When I think if you're President Trump, you probably want people talking about jobs and employment.
Mm-hmm. Rob, I did not see President Trump's NRA speech. Did you?
I caught portions of it, yes.
Okay. Do you have some takeaways for us?
Yeah, I mean, so this was a highly anticipated speech because it's the first time the NRA's had its annual meeting since the Parkland tragedy in February. And if you'll recall, in the months after, the weeks and months after Parkland, President Trump made some comments that some people associated with the NRA weren't really sure how to take. He said that, you know, he wouldn't be afraid to stand up to the NRA, and he called for some types of regulations that aren't necessarily the types of things that you would expect to hear from a president who won the NRA's endorsement.
Mm-hmm.
But President Trump made very clear to the members of the NRA that he has their back, that he is fully supportive of the Second Amendment. He laid it out in his speech. So it's one of those things where I think that if there was any question about whether or not the president would be pursuing some sort of gun regulations, he made it quite clear that he thinks that moment has passed and he's got their full backing.
Mm-hmm. Rob, it's getting scary to see all of the homegrown terrorist plots that are going on. And I'm speaking like, you know, here's a kid in Texas, in Dallas, that was plotting a terrorist attack at a mall near Dallas. That's getting to be more and more frequent.
It is. And so this is another great thing that the Daily Signal publishes, and my colleagues at the Heritage Foundation are really the only organization in the United States of the world to keep track of this. So ever since 9/11, we've kept a database of all of the various terror plots and terrorist attacks, unfortunately, that do take place. And you're absolutely right. We've hit the 90th since 9/11. Overall, there have been about 103 plots that have happened in the United States, many of which have been thwarted. You never even hear about them because, you know, they don't get the attention that if an attack does happen.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's one of those things where we have to remain vigilant. You know, just because it might not be on the front page every day, and there might be other things that are occupying the news cycle, there still are some bad actors, and there are some people who, whether through the internet or other means, are trying to influence those people right here in the United States to take those terrorist actions.
Mm-hmm. Now, Rob, at 2:00 today, Eastern Time, I think President Trump is going to make the decision on the Iran deal, and I, of course, we're in Central Time, so we're going to find out about it before you. But what do you think is going to happen?
Well, it seems pretty clear that after months of waiting, over a year really of waiting, President Trump is going to take action to what many are saying will impede the deal. So if he doesn't fully back out of it, certainly it'll have major changes. There's been a frantic lobbying on the part of those who have were involved in negotiating it, like former Secretary of State John Kerry, to try to salvage the deal.
Mm-hmm.
He's getting pressure from some foreign allies in the United Kingdom and other places to salvage the deal. But this is one of those things that we talked about campaign promises earlier, Bill. This is one of those things that President Trump made pretty clear when he was running for office. I think he was frustrated by Rex Tillerson and the Department of State for not moving more aggressively in this regard. Tillerson's now out of the picture. He has a new Secretary of State. So this will be a major action. It's so hard to predict, you know, we're just a few hours away, so I'll leave the specifics for the
sure.
president to announce, but it does seem quite clear that he's willing to be more aggressive in what he's willing to do in challenging Iran.
This morning on the news, driving in, I heard Dr. Sebastian Gorka say that he must pull out of this Iran deal, and every time I hear him talk, I go, ooh, I better believe him.
Well,
he's
I mean, certainly
voice.
He's somebody who's had the president's ear in the past, and
yeah.
I think probably still does. So, there are a lot of people in Trump's orbit who have been advising this for a long time. So it would not surprise me at all if that's the action that the president took today.
Yeah, interesting that Amazon is going to ban the Alliance Defending Freedom as an approved charity on their site.
It certainly is. I mean, this is another case where you just wonder what what's going on in this country, where an organization that I believe has argued multiple cases and won them before the Supreme Court, a highly respected legal group, just because they have a particular view about marriage,
mm-hmm.
now will not be allowed to have its charity rating on Amazon. We went through this last year. You'll recall that there was a website called GuideStar, which was using the Southern Poverty Law Center hate group label on several organizations in an effort to hurt them, I think, financially with donations. And you're seeing the same thing from Amazon. Now, obviously, Amazon as a private company can do whatever it wishes, but not if it weren't for the efforts of conservatives and others who support the Alliance Defending Freedom, who are putting out a campaign to try to pressure Amazon to reverse course here. So, fortunately, I think it has gained some attention, but it's one of those things where, you know, really it's going to be up to the consumers to, I think, decide, and Amazon will have to follow the market pressure.
Mm-hmm. Do you know when the meeting is going to be with Trump and Kim Jong-un? Has that date been determined?
We don't know the specific date yet, uh-huh. but certainly it's going to be coming up here within the next couple of months. And look, this is another situation where, it got some buzz last week where some Republicans in Congress wanted to nominate the president for the Nobel Peace Prize. Of course, our former president, Barack Obama, received that perhaps a little prematurely in his tenure. But it's one of those things where there's going to be high stakes. We've been down this road with North Korea in the past, where we've seen promises made and then promises broken. So I think that President Trump, he's somebody who loves the deal and the art of deal making. So we will see if he and Kim Jong-un and the South Koreans can maybe strike a deal here that puts us on a path where we no longer have to live under the threat of a missile attack from this rogue nation.
Mm-hmm. Rob, do you know anything about the health of Social Security right now? I just saw in the paper this morning that Social Security beneficiaries top 62 million. That's a lot of checks every month.
It certainly is. For somebody my age, probably not very promising. But it's a program that's desperately in need of reform, as are all of the entitlement programs. So, I mean, that includes Medicaid and Medicare. I think this is one area where the president, again, was pretty clear on the campaign trail that he was not going to touch these programs. I think that's one of the reasons that so many people came out to support him, because unlike some other Republican candidates in the past, notably our former president George W. Bush, he scared some people when he talked about Social Security reform. I think it needs to be done in a way that does not frighten current beneficiaries. We have to talk about changes happening in the future, but they are desperately in need of reform because they are taking up larger and larger portions of the federal budget, and without reform, there's not going to be money left for any of the kind of discretionary needs that our country may have. So
yeah.
So I certainly hope that we see Social Security reform in our lifetime. I'm just not sure you're going to see it with this president.
Yeah, Rob, I have to keep you on for another minute or two because you're just so good. Let me ask you this. April, I read, was the best month in history for U.S. budget, according to CBO figures.
Yeah, well, look, when you have something like tax reform, which is generating the type of revenue that it is, because, you know, obviously we've seen this happen before. When you lower rates and you lower the corporate rate, you lower personal rates, the federal government tends to bring in more revenue. The fewer people are avoiding paying taxes or delaying paying taxes. Obviously, April, what was it this year, 18th, I think, was tax day. So not particularly surprising, and I think that states are seeing it as well. I mean, you have a lot of interest now on the part of so many lawmakers around the country who have seen the positive effects of the tax cuts, that they either want to, number one, make them permanent, or number two, do what they call tax reform 2.0 and embark on some of those other initiatives that they didn't quite get to last year but would like to return. So, again, just like we were talking about Obamacare earlier, I think this is something that the Congress could certainly do this year. There's plenty of time to take action. And if Republicans really are in jeopardy of losing their majority in the House, you know, they need to get something done before January when that disappears.
Mm-hmm. Rob, today is National Teacher Day. Do you have a fond memory of a past teacher of yours?
Oh, certainly, and of course, my mother was a school librarian, so certainly thinking of her specifically, and many other teachers who've had a positive influence on my life, and my two boys and their teachers who are great role models for them and have been you know, important in their lives this past year. So, yes, we're very grateful for the teachers and appreciate the hard work that they do each and every day.
So where was your mom the school librarian? Was it in high school or grade school or where?
Actually, kindergarten through 12. So I went to a small public school in upstate New York, and it was small. And so she had both libraries, for the little kids and the big kids.
Oh, that's tremendous. Well, happy Mother's Day to her and to your wife, and I just hope you have a great weekend, and thanks again for being on the show.
Thanks so much. It's great to be on with you.
Yep, Rob Louie's been my guest, editor of the Daily Signal. Go to dailysignal.com for more information on Rob and his colleagues. I will take a very short break and be back in a minute. It is half past the hour. Let's take a little break for news, find out what's going on. And then when we come back, we're going to talk to Dr. Rosemary Stein from the Christian Medical and Dental Association. So look forward to having her on the line in about 8 minutes. Good morning. It's 26 minutes until the top of the hour. Do you see joy as a choice? Bible mentions or reminds us that the joy of the Lord can be yours regardless of your circumstances. I know it's kind of a tough pill to swallow, but Kay Warren shares one of her favorite Bible verses that gives her hope and ultimately leads to joy for her every day.
Romans 15:13, and I say it to myself almost every day, may the God of hope fill you with all joy and peace as you trust in him, so that you may overflow with hope by the power of the Holy Spirit. It's like we talked about joy and hope being inextricably linked together. The God of hope will fill us with joy and peace as we, here's the key, trust in him. And when we do, we can overflow with hope and joy by the power of the Holy Spirit.
A nice, simple message. Go hear the entire message. You can go to myfaithradio.com. Kay Warren is the author, and that is called Choosing Joy. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, Dr. Rosemary Stein's with us.
The family, deliberate in passing along biblical values to the next generation. So, how are you doing? This is Jim Garlow in a special series for the family. What are you doing in your home to give your children intentional, deliberate biblical values? Here's how one mom did it. Angela raised six kids. Every morning as they started for school, she wrote a scripture verse on a napkin, personalizing for each child their names in the verse, and put it in their lunch bag. Six kids from K through 12, that's over 15,000 napkins with verses. When Angela's son went off to the Air Force Academy, she saw a drawer open his room, and to her shock, he had saved all those napkins. It doesn't cost much, a little bit at a time, but what an influence on the next generation, and the next, and the next. This is Jim Garlow. There's more at jimgarlow.com.
Thank you.
of sugar helps the medicine go down in a most delightful way.
And that walk-up music belongs to Dr. Rosemary Stein from the Christian Medical and Dental Association. Good morning, Dr. Rose.
Good morning. I just love that song.
I do, too. It makes me happy every time I hear it. So how are you?
Just a quick, doing well. Just
good.
A quick little story about that song. I actually say that a spoonful of sugar makes the medicine go down at least 5 times a day.
Oh, wow.
Instruct parents when they're giving medicine, if you have something nice and sweet to
uh-huh.
follow it,
yeah.
the medicine will stay down better.
Interesting. So I did not know that. So I appreciate that. Today is National Teacher Day, and I'm just wanting to ask most of my guests if they have a fond memory of a teacher.
Oh, that's a great one. Thanks for bringing that up. My mom was a teacher. I mm-hmm. came from a long line of teachers and superintendents.
Okay.
So it was a rarity to have a doctor in the family. But my favorite story about a teacher was in fifth grade. I had a teacher called Miss Grace Rabe, and she was as stoic and as difficult as her name sounds. But she really was a very, very sweet lady inside, but she wanted to sort of raise her during that school year to be stronger people. There was one day I chose an outfit that was like little shorts and a little top that was kind of cute, but in her eyes, not appropriate for school. She called me to her desk and she said, "Rosemary, those are playground clothes. We wear appropriate clothes for school."
Mm-hmm.
And she said it just low enough that I could hear, but the others couldn't. They knew that I had been called to the desk. My face went ashen that Miss Grace had to talk to me in that way. I never forgot to wear appropriate clothes to appropriate places.
Wow, that's quite a lesson you learned. All right, I want to talk about kids and an article that came across my desk that quoted you. It was about kids need more one-on-one time with mom.
Yes, and the premise of the story, I think what the author of the story wanted to convey was that moms should be able to, have their career, and as long as they're doing all the right things, that they don't have to worry about the kids. That it was not the truth that kids have mental health issues because their parents aren't, or their mom isn't at home. And much to the author's dismay, my experience did not match what she thought the end point of the article was going to say. And I said, "I'm really sorry, Carlene, but that's what I see in the clinic, over the last 20 years and tens of thousands of children, is that the ones that the parents appropriate the right amount of time in the right ways, and only each parent can know, only each mom can know what that is, are the ones that have better mental health." And it was sort of shocking to come to that conclusion that a lot of our children are not doing as well in their mental health as they grow up because we're just not spending that kind of time. And it is quantity and quality. It's both those things together.
Mm-hmm. When you're forming your identity, it's just essential to have a constant input from loving parents, isn't it?
Absolutely, because your mind can go, as a child, it goes into corners of imagination.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have a mother to lovingly but firmly take you out of that little corner, that's where you'll stay. You'll remain in an identity that's not really your own. And your mom really knows who you are and who you're meant to be. She has that voice of God, I like to say, that's talking to her and sort of leading you in the right direction. When moms are absent, children tend to stray from their pathway.
Mm-hmm. I have always found this remark interesting when teachers would say so-and-so has trouble sitting still. I go, well, of course, they're a kid. they want to move. They need to move. And how are we doing nowadays with schools giving kids a blend of both?
Oh, not very well, I'm afraid. And the article that is on my Facebook page, I think it highlights a part of it, but it doesn't highlight another part, because it's not necessarily the most appropriate place for the child to be moving around and dancing in the classroom. I think the problem really is that we're not giving children recess time so that they can be themselves and be kids and form those friendships and come back inside renewed and refreshed. I see kids that are sitting in classrooms and they're sitting on the floor, and kids need a good mix of sort of discipline and understanding authority and also be freed up to be a kid. We're not giving them that kind of time where they can go outside and bond and skip rope and do hopscotch and throw around a ball and then come back inside and understand, okay, I'm back, you know, I'm back inside and I got to pay attention to my teacher again. I think it was recess that the kids are really, really missing. And even recess today is not really recess. Everything is planned out. Kids need the time to relax and be a kid.
Yeah. If you're giving kids space for physical activity, does that help with their own self-discipline?
If they have a time for physical activity that's gym-related and you can teach mm-hmm. them how to throw a ball and take their turn, I think that's good. But that's not the thing. That should not take the place of recess. Mm-hmm. Those are two different things.
Yeah. I remember recess just being so much fun. You couldn't wait to
Me
get
too.
Out for recess. And it actually kind of gave the school day a little bit of balance because there was a part of school which I really loved, which was recess.
I remember that too. And I remember just you had a plan of what you were going to talk about, or if you brought something special from home to be able to share during recess time. But you were allowed to just be a kid.
Yeah, and I remember some supervision on the playground, but it was really our job to figure out what games we were going to play and how we were going to organize ourselves and break into teams. And you know, to me, that was a big part of just getting along with your other friends on the playground.
Yeah, and nobody wanted to have the whistle blown on at them, so that you remained disciplined so that you got away from where the teacher would call on you because you were outside of bounds.
Mm-hmm. All right, Dr. Rose, I remember when I was in high school, there was the big fear of getting caught in the hallways, ready for this? Chewing gum. Oh, no.
That's right.
Remember that? So now, all of a sudden, kids are now vaping and sneaking these vaping in classroom. Explain that to me.
Oh, boy. And it's the thought process is that because it's just a vapor, which obviously is infused with different substances, that it doesn't do any harm. And so kids really have believed this, and they're taking them to school. And some schools don't really know what to do about it because they don't really have a policy. And so the teacher might take it away only to learn that there's not a policy, or you can hide it because it's, you know, once again, it's just a vapor, and you take it out and you take a smoke or an inhalation of it. The classrooms don't know what to do about it. But the worst thing is that these vapes are infused with certain chemicals that can be very harmful to children's brains. I mean, a high dose of nicotine that is the most common vape form is not good for developing brains of children. But there are much more noxious substances that are being passed around in the vapes. And these Juuls that are just sort of heated up vapes that can be plugged into the computers, those are fairly dangerous because they have a nicotine content that's quite higher than just the regular vapes.
Yeah, unbelievable. All right, let me take a break. When I come back, more with Dr. Rosemary Stein from the Christian Medical and Dental Association. We'll be right back. Minutes until the top of the hour. I'm speaking to Dr. Rosemary Stein from the Christian Medical and Dental Association. And Dr. Rose, I was reading a story of this 13-year-old boy who was in this horrible accident, and I think he had 7 skull fractures, and he's 13 years old, and his parents were at the point where, okay, he's not coming back, so it's probably time, according to what the doctor said, to maybe donate his organs. So they signed over the papers, and they were sort of getting ready for that, and he regained consciousness, and now he seems to be doing just fine.
And this tells us a lot about the pathway that medicine is going right now, where we have socialized medicine, and we have people making decisions for our children that perhaps don't have their best interests at mind. We're thinking about baby Charlie and baby Alfie.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that, you know, when it's a computer that makes the decision whether this life is worth living or where it's worth continuing to give ventilation or oxygen to a child, then I don't know that we're going to come up with the right decisions. In fact, I'm pretty sure that many times we won't come up with the right decisions because these charts don't have a soul. And so when you factor a soul and a person making a decisions for a child that cares about the child, that makes all of the difference. The parents waited for a little while. They were looking to lovingly give the organs to other children that might have needed the organ,
mm-hmm.
and the child came back to life. He's not completely recuperated by any means, but he is alive, and he's able to share what he saw at Heaven's Gate.
Yeah.
And that is an amazing thing all by itself.
Yeah. So when the doctors say he's showing no signs of brain activity or movement, you think, well, that's it. But now he's up and alert and talking and conversing. And it does make it interesting to think about baby Alfie and Charlie Gard and these other babies that were sort of given a death sentence. And it's the government deciding it's time for them to go.
That's right. A chart can't decide. And these are all charted things. You're
yeah.
sort of looking at all that, and the chart tells you at the end no possibility of reviving, and the chart would have been wrong.
Mm-hmm. So, Dr. Rose, do you have a saving a child, saving America, one child at a time story?
I certainly do. And in view of the story we just shared, I wanted to share the story of Leo. Leo was born almost full term. His mom is older, and she was diagnosed with being pregnant with a child that had Down syndrome when she was about 12 weeks pregnant with him. And at the hospital, she was asked whether she wanted to carry the child to term or not. She was shocked, being a very devout Christian, that she would even be given a question like that, because it gave her the impression that the child was discardable. But she said, of course, he's my child. Even if it's a very difficult life, or even if he dies a day after he's born, he's still my child.
Mm-hmm.
So she carried Leo to term, and Leo had an incredibly difficult first 9 months. He was in the hospital for about 4 or 5 of those months. He had open heart surgery. I called to the hospital on a daily basis because I thought that Leo was going to die. And I just knew the other 2 children in the family and how beautiful and precious they were. And I really felt strongly that Leo was supposed to come home. Well, today Leo is almost 2 years old. He's starting to walk. He talks. You can see him on my Facebook page if you scroll around enough, but he is an absolute pleasure. He gives us life and light. Every time he comes into the office, his family just has so much joy from Leo, and we should never give up on life, because life is a gift from God, and our children are so valuable. It's what we are able to guide our country to, you know, to the next generation with. So never give up on the life of your children. Always carry them safely until the last moment that you're able to.
That's beautiful, really a beautiful comment as a doctor and a scientist, but as a believer in Christ and then also a mother. Those are all Those are such strong statements coming from you. I appreciate that very much, Dr. Rose.
Thank you. I love sharing these stories. I think they're given to me as gifts so that I can share them. So I cherish the opportunity to be able to give them to your audience.
I believe they are, too. Well, happy Mother's Day to you, and thank you so much for coming on the program, and have a great week.
Thank you.
You bet. Dr. Rosemary Stein has been my guest from the Christian Medical and Dental Association. We'll take a short break and be back with more in just a minute.
It's morning. Your best bet to make it a good one is to listen to the Early Morning Late Show with Bill Arnold on Faith Radio.
Special thanks to Dr. Rosemary Stein. Always enjoy her. And it is National Teachers Day, and I was thinking of a great story I heard about a Christian author named Mary Ann Bird. She was born with a cleft palate, and she didn't hear very well in one ear, and she walked with a little bit of a limp. So she was always tremendously teased as a kid, and she just didn't like herself, and she remembered making stuff up. She would say, well, I fell one day and cut my lip on a piece of glass, because she just didn't want to think she was born a certain way, and she just didn't like herself and was had bouts of depression, and she was very influenced by a teacher she had. And she said, I grew up in the 60s when they had hearing tests that they would conduct at the school. So there would be a little scrim that the teacher would put up by her desk, and you would walk up to stand on the other side of the scrim, and then the teacher would say something, and then you as the student would repeat back what you heard. So the teacher might say, the sky is blue, or my shoes are red. And then the student would hear that and repeat back, and the teacher would take notes. And if the student wasn't repeating back what they said, they would put up a little red flag, and you might want to go further investigate your hearing. So those were hearing tests conducted back in the 60s. Not super scientific, but that's what they did. And Mary Ann Bird said that she was so profoundly affected by her teacher when she went up that day for her hearing test. And she didn't hear very well in one ear, so she said, I deliberately kind of cheated my head to the other side to improve my chances of hearing. And she said, I leaned forward to listen to what the teacher was going to say that I could repeat back. And she said, the next 7 words that came out of her mouth changed my life forever. I leaned forward, and the teacher whispered to her, I wished you were my little girl. And she said it forever changed her life. So the power of teachers is pretty strong. And if you're a teacher, God bless you and the work you do and the way you serve our kids of our country and the difference you make. I know my teachers, I have so many who left such a big impression on me. And maybe it wasn't so much what they taught me in books, but what they shared with me about their life and how they invested in me and cared about me. And boy, what a difference it made. I can think of my teacher, Bud Jensen, who just recently died in the last year. And what a champion he was of students and how much he loved the kids. And everybody knew he loved the kids. And what a difference it made. So if you're a teacher, what a difference you're making. So God bless you this day as you go about wrapping up the school season. I know you're probably ready for summer vacation as well. We've got a great second hour coming up. We'll take a short break and be back with more of the Early Morning Late Show Hour 2 in just a minute. Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.